So what time is it? It's a complicated question if you read Jennifer Egan's latest work. If you know her previous work, fiction or nonfiction, you know she's an indefatigable journalist with a real feel for character and curiosity and definitely a notion of inventive plots. Her new book, A Visit from the Goon Squad, it is a little bit hard to describe. Let me just give you some details. There's Sasha, one of the main characters, a kleptomaniac who works for Benny, a big-shot music executive who sprinkles flakes of gold in his coffee, kind of an aphrodisiac thing. There's Benny's ex-wife, Stephanie, her brother, Jules, a celebrity journalist. There's Benny's mentor, Lou, and Jocelyn, one of the many girls he seduces. And there's Scotty, Benny's old friend and bandmate, who was head over heels in love for Jocelyn. I could go on. But mostly, this book is about how one century becomes another, how music is a marker for culture and time and aging. And the most fascinating thing about this book is that time does not go forward. It goes forward, back, around, over, under. Jennifer Egan, good morning.
Good morning.
Congratulations. This book is getting fabulous reviews. It's a terrific read. And as a novelist, you have managed not simply to comment on our age of Googling and digital disconnectedness, but really to create a sense of storytelling where time does not pass in the traditional way at all. I'm fascinated why you chose this.
Well, in a way, I didn't necessarily think of it in such grand terms as I was moving through it. I began not even really knowing I was writing a novel, but just writing about Sasha, the kleptomaniac, who's on a date with a guy she met online and has this impulse to take a woman's wallet in the bathroom. That's really all I started with. You know, that unfolds in all kinds of kind of nutty ways. And in the course of that that chapter, she mentions her boss who sprinkles gold flakes in his coffee and sprays pesticide in his armpits. And I thought, why would someone do those things? So then I ended up writing a chapter about him. And it went on that way. In his chapter, he mentions his ex-wife, who is on the number one doubles team at their country club. And that conjures kind of a cliche of the tennis-playing ex-wife. And I thought, but who is she really? So I wrote a chapter about her. Then once I realized what I was doing, I thought, okay, so this is a book in which we move around really through curiosity.
But we meaning readers. I mean, the amazing thing is that we know a lot about these characters. The characters know relatively little about each other in various scenes.
That's true. I mean, I love the idea of trying to encompass the whole spectrum of human experience from tragedy to farce and move through people's lives, but in the manner of a kind of 900-page, you know, 19th-century novel with an omniscient narrator, but doing it in under 300 pages.
And with a sense of being completely disconnected. It's an epic novel of our disconnected, disjointed, time-shifted age, it seems to me.
I think it may have ended up reading that way. Again, though, I myself am not that technologically astute. I write by hand still, you know, on legal pads. So it's funny to me that...
so annoying to hear. That is so macho.
That's a lot of words.
Yeah,
Could I just ask a question about the process? I am so interested. First of all, I'm at a disadvantage. I haven't yet read what I gather is your truly wonderful book, which I will. But fiction writers always talk, and you've just done it, about how they start to write something and then how the character just takes them where they're going, that somehow the characters have a life of their own. It's not from your head. It's somehow from this character on the page. Is that an accurate description?
It is pretty much. I mean, I tend to start more with a sense of time and place, and the characters come from that, but I absolutely don't know what will happen. And in fact, the pleasure of it for me is following my own curiosity and being surprised by the outcome. I think that one of the differences about this
book... That's a stunning statement, given that you're the one whose hand is on the pen.
Well, ultimately, I try to own it all, take responsibility for it, and make it really good, which, you know, doesn't happen right away, certainly not when I have, you know, 18 legal pads full of scrawl. But the impulses, the big decisions, the leaps all seem to happen in that unconscious way. I really look to my unconscious to guide me. I think my conscious mind is really too limited to do very much.
Although for you, cut and paste is quite literally cut and paste if you're doing it all on legal pads. Let's talk a little bit about the music industry, because that's really an underlying theme in all this. In many ways, it forms a kind of backdrop of time. We understand music both in its contemporary kind of rebellious sense of trying to do something unique, as an artist does, as a writer does, but it's also a form of nostalgia to remember the way it was and the bands that we were once in and the songs that we once listened to.
I think I was led to write about the music industry for all kinds of reasons. Certainly the most immediate is that I think music has a way of cutting through time and making it seem to disappear. I go running, I have my iPod on, and I'm basically awash in all these different moments of my life that different songs remind me of. So I think music has that power, and especially...
How is it for you? Let's explore.
Wait,
what's mid-20s in terms of music for you?
Mid-20s is probably, well, both sort of grungy stuff like Nirvana and also the kind of dreamy, trippy English bands like Portishead and Tricky, some of those bands. Bjork, I was listening to, actually maybe not till I was in my early 30s.
Try mid-40s then. What's music that evokes mid-40s for Jennifer Egan?
Well, actually, I've fallen in love with Laura Veers, who's a Canadian songwriter, and I think what I love about her stuff is that it feels very nostalgic. I find that if I listen to Laura Veers and kind of look at my children, I'm immediately filled with a sense of time passing and how they're going to grow up and everything is in motion. You know, in a way, some of the feeling that Goon Squad has.
A playlist can become a novel. That's one of the premises of this book, it seems to me.
Well, it literally a record album, because there's an A side and a B side. And actually, that speaks to one of the other reasons that I think I was led to the music industry, because this is so much a book about time and change, and because I think in our era, time and change are measured technologically. I mean, things are moving so quickly. And as we all know, the music industry has felt that probably more severely than almost any other.
Well, journalism is dying.
Yes, I think we're in close second.
But it's interesting, excuse me, that you talk about it as an A side and a B side, and that it's more like an album, because hasn't what's happened with iTunes and with Napster that been that you no longer have to buy the whole album? In other words,
there's
everybody's
no
making
anymore,
up their own albums. No sequence,
I know.
Exactly,
which,
right.
Which I think from the point of view of the artist is a disaster. I mean, the analogy for a novelist would be, certain chapters. You
right.
know, a couple of chapters.
It's coming,
this,
by the way. That is coming.
Well,
that's next.
You know, a couple of chapters of this were in The New Yorker. So I guess you could say, well, those are my hit chapters. Well, you can't write a book if people are only reading certain chapters. So I felt for the artist, and I guess I ended up embodying a lot of that in the character of Benny, this record producer who's just filled with rage over the direction the industry has gone in. And that leads him to some fairly insane acts. But I guess I identified with the feeling of powerlessness against technology.
You wrote a death scene before you really even understood who the character was. Describe how that was.
Well, I wrote it in this blind way that I tend to write on a legal pad about an older man who's visited after he has a stroke by two women in their 40s, and it's clear that he knew them when they were very young, teenagers. One of them seems to be mentally a little bit unstable, and she essentially blames him, it becomes clear, for destroying her life through their relationship. And it's a very short story. It's about six pages long. But I found myself thinking in the few years after I wrote it, what's the whole story around that? I mean, all I had was maybe the story unfolds in maybe 20 minutes of their lives, but it suggests this gigantic shape, and I was interested in discovering that shape.
And the tentacles stretch throughout the novel. It's called A Visit from the Goon Squad. Jennifer Egan is the author. Do writers ever retire, Jennifer?
No way.
Right. Well, we are getting a lot of feedback from listeners about our discussion earlier this hour about moving the retirement age up.
Well, I can't imagine retiring, because for me, the surprise and pleasure of doing this is what makes my life fantastic.
Well, what time is it to retire?
On the issue of retirement age, it was sometime in the 60s when the boomers started complaining about the deadwood at the top. The old people needed to retire so they could find work and move up. That happened. Now they're griping because they have to retire earlier. Come on, folks. Make up your mind.
We will. Thanks to Jennifer Egan. I'm John Hockenberry.
I'm Lynn Scherr, and this is The Takeaway.
At Radiolab, we love nothing more than nerding out about science, neuroscience, chemistry.
But we do also like to get into other kinds of stories. Stories about policing. Or
politics.
Country music.
Hockey.
Sex. Of bugs.
Regardless of whether we're looking at science or not science, we bring a rigorous curiosity to get you the answers.
And hopefully make you see the world anew.
Radiolab, adventures on the edge of what we think we know.
Wherever you get your podcasts.